Maybe you found yourself at a friend or acquaintance's house scanning the titles on their bookshelf. Or maybe a holiday party brought you to be mingling in someone's kitchen and you find yourself taking stock of their refrigerator decorations. Many of us like to make observations about what other people keep in their homes. It's part of the adventure of being welcomed into someone's personal space. Our next guest took that to another level. He made it his decade-long research project to closely examine our personal spaces and places where we've left our mark, from Spotify playlists to bookshelves to what's in a refrigerator. And we want to do a little experimenting today on the air. We're going to put our guest's snooping skills to the test. You can call in at 800-642-1234, whether you're at home, in your car, or in your office. Call us and describe the space you're in. Tell us about your favorite playlist, or tell us what's on your living room bookshelf or the walls of your bedroom. We'll see if our guests can squeeze out any details of your personality. That's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sam Gosling is a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. He's the author of the book Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. And he spent more than a decade peeking in people's offices, homes, and closets to try to understand more about personality and identity. Sam, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks a lot.
Well, first of all, I have to say, this sounds like a pretty fun research assignment. You get to poke around in people's things, look at their playlists, scour medicine cabinets, and make judgments, even mailing a box of strangers' possessions to you to take a look at. What was the research like for you as an academic snoop?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those questions that I think a lot of people think about all the time. I think it's one of those things that we are actually doing all the time. We're interested as humans, we're interested in others, and we're always searching for information wherever we can find it, and people's homes are one of those places.
Do you think we just are interested in other people and their spaces and their things, or on some level are we also comparing it to ours and seeing how we stack up?
Yeah, I think we're doing both of those things. I mean, you know, other humans have always provided us with the biggest opportunities and threats. So I think we're naturally attuned to looking for information. But we're also constantly trying to, you know, figure out what's normal. That's also a very important function, being able to place ourselves appropriately within society. So we're doing both of those things at once.
What are some of the spaces, and I use that pretty broadly, not just physical spaces, but what kind of spaces do you find or have you found in your research that are the most telling about who we are and what makes us who we are?
Well, the most telling space we ever found is a place that unfortunately doesn't exist anymore, and that was in olden days before Facebook, if you can imagine such a terrible world. And there it was when people had their own websites. They would have these personal websites where they would just sort of, you know, decide, I want to tell the world about myself. And we found that when people put those up, that kind of information, and we had strangers look at those were the most accurate impressions we ever found sort of across the board.
It's interesting, though, because that's a very intentional, like, let me tell you about myself kind of situation. Whereas if you go into someone's office or their living room or their car, that's not necessarily, I mean, on some level, maybe they're kind of projecting the image they want, but a lot of it is just how they're living and who they are. So are you able to glean things from areas of people's lives that they may not actually think are broadcasting information about themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, as you are going through places, one of the important things to keep in mind is this a public space or is this a private space? I mean, I think, you know, a great example is thinking about the photos in somebody's office and just thinking about their orientation, because the very same photo could have a very different meaning depending on its orientation. If you go into somebody's office and they have photos pointing towards you, that's serving a very different psychological function than if the photo is, you know, pointing towards the occupant, him or herself, you know, where it's there, the function is for the occupant.
In preparing for this, I remember reading about diplomas on a wall in an office.
Yeah.
And if they're facing the person whose office it is, it could mean something very different than if they are clearly placed so that anyone comes in notices all of these impressive diplomas.
Right, exactly. And this is really illustrate sort of like two of the functions of the sort of objects in our spaces. The first is what I call identity claims, and these are deliberate statements we make to others about our goals, our attitudes and values. We're kind of broadcasting to the world, hey world, this is who I am. It's the same thing we're doing when we put a bumper sticker on our car, or we wear a T-shirt with our university or our favorite band, or whatever it is. We're essentially trying to let people know about who we are, which is a very important function. And although we're doing it deliberately, there's no suggestion at all that these claims are disingenuous. I think, in fact, you know, research shows that on average, people are being honest about who they are. And then you can compare those identity claims with what I call thought and feeling regulators. And those are deliberate things we do to the environment to affect how we think and affect how we feel. And so, you know, in that case, the diploma facing ourselves, where it's not for the benefit of others, would be saying, oh, you know, it might be just remembering that time and resonating with your own identity and making you think about the ideas and the times and places associated with that, not necessarily there as a broadcasting to others. Of course, in practice, it's sometimes difficult. You don't know by the placement whether it's there for others, for the occupant, or quite possibly too, for both.
We're talking with Sam Gosling. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin, and he's the author of the book Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. And Sam, why don't you take us along on one of these investigations? Say you're going into someone's home for the first time. What is the first thing that you focus in on in trying to figure out who that person is?
Well, the first thing I focus in on is not focusing in on anything in particular too much. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes people make, is they sort of see an object, it grabs their attention, and they kind of try to interpret that very carefully. The really important thing is to look for sort of broad themes. Because let's say I go into your office and there's, you know, a blue plastic dinosaur sitting, you know, on the desk or something like that. There are many reasons why you might have that blue plastic dinosaur, and it's very difficult to know. It might be something to do with your name, or like a gift from somebody, or a gift you're about to give to somebody, or some joke, or who knows what. And so in order to disambiguate any single object, you need to kind of combine it with others. So the key thing is sort of looking around for the sort of this general impression. Is it, you know, and we found in our research is these kind of broad clues, like, for example, whether the place is sort of distinctive, like, which is a necessarily a kind of a broad, higher level clue. It's those clues that are tend to be more valid than, you know, the single thing sitting on the desk or the window ledge or whatever it is.
Well, Sam, we asked our listeners to join us at 800-642-1234 and to tell us about the space that they are in. And let's start with Margaret calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Margaret.
Hi there.
So tell us about where you are.
Okay, I'm in my car. How much detail do you want? A lot?
Sure.
Okay, I'm in my car, and I'd just like to preface by saying it was completely cleaned, vacuumed everything 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I have two children in the back in their car seats. I have a couple of blankets back there, a coat, a baby carrier, some artwork my daughter did. I've got a pile of books on my lap that I'm returning to the library in a moment. I have a breast. I have some bell peppers that I was planning to cut up once we pick my husband up and he's the driver, and various knickknacks like hairbrushes, part of a Halloween costume, and snacks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Sam, I'm going to go out on a limb. I am not a professional, but I'm going to guess that Margaret is a parent. Just going out on a limb there. Sam, what did you pick up on there?
Yeah, I mean, so what I'd really want to do is, like, probably get a sense of sort of the nature of the books and the diversity of the books and the patterns, but there are a couple of things that come to this. And one of the things is the very important thing that you just mentioned is that, yeah, many of our the things in our spaces are a consequence of the things that we do and that there are different norms. So, for example, it makes little sense to, you know, compare a parent's room or with that of a, say, college student, because they're just sorts of different standards in both terms of what they're required to do or not. So just, I mean, going on this, there were a couple of things. So first of all, the books tend to be a clue, but it would somewhat depend on what the books are and the diversity of them, to a personality trait known as openness to experiences, which is tends to be people who tend to kind of enjoy new ideas. They tend to be like abstract ideas. They tend to kind of be more philosophical versus people at the other end of the poll who tend to be more conventional and traditional and concrete.
Well, let's ask Margaret. Margaret, what kind of books are on your lap?
I actually just returned them. all of those books were children's books. Most were new ones to me. There's one about shapes. There were a couple of Dr. Seuss books, which I had read. There was an author that I'd read, but I hadn't read that particular book. It was Mo Willems' book. So all of those today were children's books, and I have an 11-month-old and a 4-year-old. So some were more geared for the no words, and some had words and pictures.
All right, so Sam.
Yeah, so I think this illustrates right the key point that I was making there. Right, is that you absolutely need to know the context in order to understand those books. Right, it's very different having a big stack of children's books for your children than it is having various works of philosophy and feminist critiques and whatever it is. So this wouldn't necessarily. So those sorts of books, of course, would be less diagnostic. It would just have less clues about the openness. One might look at things like the unconventionality of those. So if they tend to be some of the unconventional books or a broad variety, that might hint still at openness. But what it does more is it hints. I would like to see, were the books being, I would look, for example, if they were there, about were they being returned on time or were they late? Those sorts of things, along with the state of the car, would give clues to this personality trait known as conscientiousness. It's not a very good label for it. It's more about kind of dependability, reliability, levels of organization. And I get the sense from the fact that the car was very spotless and isn't now, have snacks at the ready and don't, is that there's kind of these, there's perhaps a slight mismatch between the sort of aspirational self, really wanting to be organized together and things, but having, having it more difficult to actually pull together in reality. So, in terms of this trait, I would say the person is probably, higher in aspirations than in reality.
And totally understandable for a parent of small children. Thanks for that call, Margaret. And Sam, I would add, you were talking about, are the books, these very heady intellectual titles, but doesn't it also matter a little bit whether those library books actually got read or if they got taken out with the best of intentions and returned without having been opened?
It absolutely does. And that's why when we're looking at objects, you want to look at, say, what is the object? So, and in this case, we'd say it is a book. And then you want to look at the state of the object. And the state is crucial because it tells you at the behavior. And the behavior is, the real clues to personality. Has it been opened? Did the person get halfway through it? Does the person have lots of books where you only get to the first few pages? Are there notes in the margins? Are the corners folded over? Are there, crumbs from where the person was eating a muffin at the same time? So, essentially being Sherlock Holmes in this case, looking for what I call behavioral residue, the residue of these behaviors that have occurred. So is the first thing, what is it? The second, what state is it in? And then the third is the location. And because that can also help you with the psychological function. Is it the case that kind of all the highbrow books are put out on the coffee table for all the guests to see, whereas the kind of trashy romance novels are the ones that are really read and kept, away in private in the bedroom?
We're talking with Sam Gosling. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin, and he's the author of the book Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. We're learning how to be better snoops and what we can find out by looking at how spaces are organized and what's in them. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think your office or bedroom says about you? Call in and describe your music collection or your social media places. What's in your office or maybe what's in your refrigerator? Give us a call at 800 800- 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. Right now, we're picking up the conversation, talking about what you can tell about someone's personality by taking a look at their music collection, their living room layout, even their favorite clothes. Sam Gosling is a professor of psychology at the University of Texas, Austin, and he's the author of the book Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. Now, Sam, you've talked a little bit about the different traits that different observations can indicate. There are five big traits. Can you give us a very brief idea of what those are?
Yeah, sure. They're called the big five dimensions of personality. The first is one that's very familiar with us, which is essentially extroversion versus introversion. That I don't think needs much explanation. The second is agreeableness, which is, you know, really picking up on this sense of how sort of sympathetic and warm-hearted are people versus how kind of direct and critical are they. The third is one I mentioned a little bit earlier, which is conscientiousness, which is really about thinking before you act, planning, making sure you don't run out of things, versus people who tend to be, you know, late and less task-oriented and a little more chaotic. There's the next one is, it's not a very good label, but it's known as neuroticism, which distinguishes those people who are kind of more uptight and highly strung and easily stressed from those who are kind of relaxed and unflappable. And then the final one is openness to experiences, which is people who are interested in new ideas and doing new things and being unconventional and creative versus the more conventional, traditional types.
Let's go to the phones, and Laura in Manitowoc is up. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that listening to this program has really made me think about something that I find kind of interesting, and that is that I've been going to a lot of estate sales in the last couple years, and I've been enjoying it to just almost a guilty degree where, and I guess I just put my finger on why after listening to your guest, but you know, obviously what I'm doing when I'm going there is I am snooping over the people's bookshelves and how they've kind of arranged their lives. And, you know, an estate sale is different than, say, a rummage sale, because in the estate sale, that person is moving on in life. They've either passed away or they're moving into a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And so their family members go through their possessions and they decide what things to keep and what things are going to be kind of dispersed just to anyone. And so there's kind of that filter that goes on where I find it interesting to see what other people have, you know, kind of thought about that person's life and determined to be important or not important. Oftentimes you find very personal things in an estate sale, and I wonder, why wasn't that important to the family member? So I guess I've been really snooping, and now I understand why it's so enjoyable.
Thanks for that call, Laura. And Sam, that's really interesting. You do get a sense in an estate sale of it's really a snapshot of a person's life.
It absolutely is. And there it's like a single person, too. So, you know, often when we're looking at these old things, we don't know who it belongs to, and there are things belonging to many different people. And especially, you know, if it's been these things that have accumulated over a lifetime, we're really essentially seeing kind of, you know, the sort of the crystallization of all of these sorts of different elements in this person's life. And we can look at the things. We can look and say, this is the umbrella that has been used many times. But we can also see, look, this is the book that has been sitting there unopened for 20 years as well. So we can, you know, see both that mixture of the evidence of action and inaction and how those differ across objects is always fascinating.
Thanks so much for that call. And one thing I'm thinking about, Sam, is that, you know, many of us work in an office, or, you know, maybe if we drive a truck or a cab or something, we have a space that we work in. And often we feel the urge to decorate it in some way, to make it our own. Why is that? Why do we feel that need or urge to put our stamp on our surroundings?
I think there are two reasons. One of them is to essentially make ourselves feel comfortable in terms of, for example, matching our own level of arousal. So one way to think about it is one of the things we know about extroverts is they like people. They like you know, they even prefer music with voices in it, and they like being around people, and they essentially have a different kind of resting arousal state than introverts. And so they tend to want lots of stimulation around them, lots of photos of people and pictures of people and so on, whereas the introverts are tending to go for something that's a bit more calming and quieting in their spaces. So that's part of the story. But another really important part of the story is telling others about yourself, because it essentially it makes these interactions more predictable and more comfortable. If I think you know who I am, then I can kind of enter the conversation just with a bit more predictability and therefore comfort.
And maybe creating kind of a shortcut to making a connection?
Absolutely. And you know, many, many things in our places are there because with one single object, they convey a whole suite of values and goals and attitudes. If I have, you know, a picture of Gandhi, you know, sitting on my desk, you know, that tells you something very different than if I have a picture of a sports star or something like that. And just right there, music is also one where people love to tell people about their music tastes, because just by telling you sort of a few songs that I really like, I can convey this whole suite of information about me.
Well, Sam, I wish we had more time because it's so interesting, and sorry to the callers that we didn't get to, but I think I'm going to leave this conversation looking not just at other people's things, but also at my own and seeing what they say about me.
One of the important things is if you turn the sort of spotlight on yourself, because we also know that, you know, people do make mistakes. And so understanding the sorts of mistakes people make is can be quite helpful, because you understand the sorts of false impressions people may be forming about you.
Sam, thanks so much for joining us. That was Sam Gosling, a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. He's the author of the book Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You.